Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
I feel like the Gallup poll found him the best father in all the land because of the horse.
That's very possible, Wendy. Eric,
the Quinnipiac University poll was not as favorable to me, I must say.
Speaking of polls, may I ask you, that's Eric Zorn, by the way, from the Chicago Tribune. After what happened 2 years ago in the presidential election, where all polls, spoiler alert for those of you who didn't see the outcome, where all polls said that Hillary Clinton would beat Donald Trump, and it didn't end up that way. Does that say that maybe the polling companies aren't quite as legitimate or accurate as we had once thought them to be?
They were actually very close
They picked the wrong person.
Except they picked. I mean, I know it's like saying, well, it was a long fly ball,
right?
But it wasn't like they completely blew it. It wasn't like they missed it by tons. But remember, they had Hillary Clinton.
It's only a 50-50 chance.
No, they had Hillary Clinton winning the popular vote by about 4%, and she ended up winning by like 3%. So
right.
There and then there were a bunch of states, and of course some of the states surprised. I mean, they had states like Wisconsin and Michigan going for Hillary that didn't, in some cases very narrowly. Someone did the calculation though that it's actually a very small number of votes, somewhere around 100,000 around the whole country. If you switch them around, could move them where you wanted to, that Hillary would have won the Electoral College. So it wasn't like the poll companies completely fell on their faces.
Except that they picked the wrong person.
But
don't you think people did not tell the truth?
I think a lot of people didn't tell the truth.
They didn't want to admit that they were voting for Donald Trump or,
I don't think that's true this time.
No?
Now, the question Bill is asking is, could the polls be wrong now about the idea
that
the Democrats are going to take the House back? Sure, they could be wrong. A lot of people have been saying that it all is going to depend on voter enthusiasm. When you call people home, so who are you going to vote for? They'll say, I'll vote for the Democrat, or I'll vote for the Republican.
Yeah.
But are they going to actually drag themselves to the polls on election day or to early voting? And are they going to actually register that choice? Is it going to matter? And so that's all about enthusiasm. And it turns out that Democratic voters, who tend to be younger and more minority voters, don't vote as heavily in these midterm elections. They tend to vote a lot more strongly in the presidential election cycle. So you have this enthusiasm gap that Republican voters, who tend to be older and whiter, they tend to turn out more strongly in these midterms. Now, there's a lot of talk that the Democrats are very fired up. They're very energized. They're very upset about Kavanaugh. They're very upset about Trump, and that they're going to turn out. But it all depends on what happens on election day. If it's really bad weather through most of the country, you could see that. You could see people who are sort of low propensity voters not turning out. And this is
bad weather tends to favor who exactly?
Because it tends to favor the party with the most committed voters.
Yeah,
the ones that turn out more. There was a lot of talk that the Republican electorate was discouraged by the fact that that Trump had not built his wall, that he was and all his tweets and all the things that he's been doing that are make you cringe, and that they weren't going to turn out. Now it seems like maybe they're a little bit more fired up. There's all this concern about the caravan of refugees coming up from Guatemala, and they're not going to arrive in the United States by Election Day. Anyone was worried that there's going to be like some sort of showdown at the U.S.-Mexico border. That's not going to happen. It's about 2,000 miles from the Guatemalan border to El Paso, more or less, and a caravan only moves at about 20 miles a day at the most.
I mean,
you got 5,000 people, you got kids, back in the Old West, the wagon trains moved about 10 to 20 miles a day.
Yeah.
You just can't move that fast when you got that many people.
Right.
And so they're not going to show up on the border until January.
Was their original intention to be here on or around?
Oh, I don't think I don't think so. I think this is a constant stream of people who were fleeing Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, places that are dangerous for them, and their lives there are so bad that they want to come up to the U.S. And they decided they had to get together in a caravan for their own safety, and that's why they're all in one. They're not like storming the gate necessarily, but they feel like they're safer in these numbers. So Donald Trump has said that he's going to call out the military, not just the National Guard, to stay on the border and make sure that they don't swarm across the border. I don't think that's their intention, but it's going to be pretty interesting standoff when they get to the border, because You know, we let people in who apply for asylum. Once they come to the gate and apply for asylum, the process begins. And,
right.
And, you know, right now we've been locking them up and so on and not just letting them go. And we've been saying, well, we can only do so many at a time. The rest of you have to wait here outside. You'll basically camp out at the border. When you've got, I think the caravan has now 7,000 people in it, you're going to have a huge humanitarian crisis if you've got all these people who are just, like, camped out. They don't have much. You're probably going to have a humanitarian crisis as they're on their way here. And this seems to me like an opportunity for us to start thinking about why these people are coming here. And it's not because they want to take your jobs. It's because their lives are so bad in these countries. There's a lot of gang violence. There's a lot of internal strife there.
Sure.
And this is a chance for the U.S. to try to work with some of these Central American countries to make it less attractive for people, or the people will feel less of an urgency to go to pack up everything. I mean, you think about what would how you would have to feel about your life to take, like, basically a wagon full or something or less of your possessions and head out on a journey of more than 2,000 miles by foot.
Right.
I mean, you're in a desperate situation, and sure. I've heard the interviews with some of these people, and they talk about, you know, it is violence that they're fleeing. It's not just that they feel like their jobs aren't satisfying to them. This is a major crisis, and I think that the better way for us to address it, rather than to say, well, you can all come into the United States then, would be to, you know, fund programs and work with these governments down there to try to stabilize things, to deal with this gang violence, because, you know, their problems do become our problems one way or the other. So
yeah, that's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break and then we'll talk more. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
His name is Eric Zorn, Chicago Tribune columnist, and also we should mention the Mincing Rascals.
Great
podcast. Thanks, on WGN Plus.
Yeah,
you guys seem to be mincing more than usual lately.
We have been mincing our words. Yes, we have.
I don't know why.
It works for you. It's a sign of the times.
Yeah, it is.
So I wanted to talk about this vehicle mileage tax.
Yeah.
Either of you have any idea what the gas tax, and when you buy a gallon of gas in Illinois, how much gas tax do you pay? Any idea?
I have no idea.
Does it vary from county to county, or is it statewide gas tax?
I'd say 37 cents.
It's actually, if you add the federal tax to the state tax, it's about that. It's 19 cents of Illinois tax and like 18.5, I think, of federal tax, something like that. So Wendy's really close on the amount of taxes you pay per gallon. That's a fixed amount per gallon. And they set that rate in 1990 in Illinois. They had boosted it up. It had been like, so I think it was 16 cents. They boosted up a couple of cents in about 3 years' time back then. And the idea, I guess, at the time was it was going to keep going up with inflation.
Right.
But it has stayed at 19 cents because no one really wants to touch the gas tax. It's like toxic. So no one wants to look at that. And what's happened between now and then is, of course, that vehicles have gotten more fuel efficient. So we're just collecting less in the way of we're buying fewer gallons of gasoline. And of course, this gas tax goes toward fixing the roads. That's what it's for. It's for that. And so I did a little calculation for my column. If you drove 1,200 miles a year, which is about average, back in 1990, and you got 28 miles a gallon, which was what the National Highway Traffic Safety Association tells me was the average, you'd have paid about $80 in state gas taxes that year, and that's about $160 in 2018, $160 when you do an inflation calculation. Now, if you drive 1,200 miles this year in a car that gets 38 miles to the gallon, which is the new standard with the electric vehicles and so on, you pay about $60 in state gas taxes, and that so $60 in 2018 dollars this year versus $160. In 1990. So we're talking about $100 less that you're paying in real dollars, in actual inflation-adjusted dollars. And so the problem is that the fund that we use to pay for roads and bridges, highways and so on, is being depleted by that. And it's great. You know, we're all really happy that people are having more fuel-efficient cars, are going to hybrid vehicles and so on. But it's creating a real problem with how we fund our roads. Where's that money going to come from? Because we don't have any political courage to raise the gas tax. And it's not clear that raising the gas tax would necessarily be fair, because it would really hit, you know, it would hit people who have to drive older cars harder. So J.B. Pritzker, in an interview with the Daily Herald in, I think it was January, he sort of floated the idea that we need to think about a vehicle miles travel tax, VMT tax, and it's something that's been experimented with in Europe on trucks. It's been experimented with in Oregon, other places, where they the one model of it is they put a transponder in your car and it reports the miles that you drive, and they tax you rather than tax you for the gallon of gas that you buy. They tax you on the actual number of miles you drive. And the reason why this is an attractive idea to a lot of people is that it's because you can collect this information and say, okay, well, we will charge people who live out in rural areas. Say you live in McHenry County and you have to drive 15 miles to go to the grocery store. We can charge those people less, right? If we want to, you know, tweak our little algorithm so it doesn't hit those people harder. You could give people a lot of tax credits pretty easily in that way. You could also do congestion pricing in the city. You could say, well, okay, if you're going to drive into Chicago, you're going to pay X per mile if you're going to drive during rush hour. So there's all kinds of ways that you can use this to tweak the way people drive, how much they drive, and also for fairness purposes, you could give seniors exemptions now that would be very complicated to give, and so on. You could really balance it out. There's some really attractive parts of this idea. The thing that I wrote about this over the weekend, and I got a ton of mail on it, and the thing that bothers people the most about it, can you guess, is having a transponder in your car that tells the man where you are
Who cares?
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with you. If you're on the internet and you're giving to private companies, you're giving all this information about where you're going, what you're buying, what you're doing. And I don't think that the government would really care that much about where you're. They don't care. Hey, it looks like Bill Leff has been driving about 9 miles a day going to the near north suburbs. I wonder what's going on there. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it really matters that much. But there is a very strong sense that people have is this privacy sense that if you give the government that information. Now, of course, the other irony with that is there are cameras everywhere that record as you drive around where your car is. And most of us, a lot of us, have these transponders. I'm sure you guys do on your iPass, and your iPass tells you where you're at it too, and it tells when you're on the tollways, and people will point out divorce lawyers have used those to pinpoint people's locations to say he was at an assignation with his mistress when he said he was at a business meeting. We have the records to prove it, and so on.
They get taxed more for that?
The assignation tax is huge.
Yes.
So I got a ton of mail. A lot of people were very upset about the privacy implications of this. Other people were saying that, well, why don't we just charge people by the mile? Just at the end of the year, you got to report your mileage, or you got to go to the Secretary of State's office and they read your odometer, and we'll just charge you by the mile. The problem with that, of course, is that it does become pretty regressive.
Oh, yeah.
That, people who... And, of course, one other thing I wanted to mention is a way that you could do is you could give people... part of the thing about gas tax is it's a user fee, essentially. They call it, actually, the official name is a motor fuel user fee. And so, essentially, it's because you're using the roads. They presume that you put gas in your car, you drive on the roads, and therefore you're using the roads in proportion to the amount of gas you buy, which is not totally true because, some people have these gas-efficient cars, and some people have these big honking SUVs or small trucks and so on. So you could actually calibrate the charge by the kind of vehicle you have, the kind of wear and tear that it puts on the roads. So there's all these ways that this could work that if you just had people reporting their mileage, it wouldn't work. But again, we run into this roadblock or this privacy roadblock. Well, Governor Rauner in the election has been throwing this back at Pritzker. Pritzker has basically disavowed it. He said, "Well, I just said we got to think about something. We got to figure out a way to around this problem," which is true. We have to figure out a way to fund our roads, and if you're just all anti-tax, stop taxing us, someone's got to pave those roads, someone's got to rebuild those bridges.
But in the end, Eric, isn't the difference between paying the traditional tax on gas that we have been paying and the new idea for a driving tax, it's roughly $20 per person, right? It's somewhere in that range per year. It's not more than that, is it?
You mean in terms of what it would cost?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would all depend on how it was implemented. Huh. And what Pritzker said was we should need to experiment with this to make sure that it's done correctly. Again, he said this and then pulled it back away.
Yeah.
And Rauner has been using this in commercials against him, saying, he wants to tax you to go visit your friends. Well, of course, when you're driving to visit your friends now, you're already paying the gasoline tax.
Yeah.
So you are being taxed to visit your friends. But it's one of these things that's just been demagogued to death. And, of course, Governor Rauner hasn't offered any solutions, and even potential solutions, to how are we going to pay for the roads. And, you know, we could keep just, you know, raising taxes, you know, income taxes, which is, you know, if you do it in a graduated way, it could be progressive that way. But we already have fairly high taxes. Yeah. So it is a really interesting issue. And anyone wants to contact me about it at the Tribune, my address is ericzorn@gmail.com. So I'm always glad to hear from people about this.
Thanks, Eric. Greatly appreciated. We'll see you in a week.
Great.
It's Eric Zorn, everybody. We'll take a quick break and then tell you what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
And coming up, all the stories that matter with Doma Tipongo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.